to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddler Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, to be broadcast on February 7th, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's off at work, and I am recording on Tuesday today. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, although I may not be able to get right back to you. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you're listening to this on Facebook Live, you can comment down here below, send me a message, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Yeah, we got to have a rant. All right, shout out to my local cyclist and friend, John Ryan. Hang in there, buddy. We'll see you back on the bike soon. More to come in the future on that one. Annual winter cold. Yeah, I got one. That's why I wasn't on yesterday like I usually am with Fran. I got a little head cold. Not a chest cold, a head cold. We'll talk about that a little bit more on the show, too. But at least it's not COVID. And also, the next time a driver complains about bike lanes, tell them that making the streets safer for cyclists makes it safer for everyone. Anyway, this and more in the show. Positive side, big shout out to Lizzie Gonzalez from Massachusetts and Bicycle Talk personal favorite. Finished 18th this year in the UCI U23 Women's World Championships. Very major accomplishment for her, from her dad, Mark, on a Facebook post. If I had to present cyclocross in one photograph, this would be it. A very hard sport. So much mental agility and physical strength is required. Lizzie fought hard on a very heavy course, and Greg and had everything dialed in the pit. They ended up 18th, a nice step forward at the highest level of the sport. Tabor, Czech Republic World Championships, February 4th, 2024. If you'd like to see that photo, go to the Bicycle Talk Facebook page and you will see the photo and the posting that was done by Lizzie's dad. It is an impressive photo, I will say. This is not an easy sport at all. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about the worlds a little later on in the show and get into that. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. It's going to be 60 degrees this Saturday, right here in February in Connecticut. Unheard of. Well, maybe not unheard of. We seem to keep seeing this type of weather. And so, therefore, here it is. So, did you take my advice and prepare your bike for spring? Remember how I've been talking about this? This is probably a time that you might want to, you know, take a quick check real quick, because this weekend it's going to get nice and warm. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about fenders, because, you know, this time of year, no matter how nice it is outside, the roads are wet. They are definitely wet. There's a lot of melt. There may be snow melt, which we didn't get very much snow, so I'm not going to say much about snow melt, but there was a lot of frost in the ground, and there still is, and so the roads are weeping. You know, it happens. They're wet. They're messy. There's gravel. There's all sorts of stuff on the road right now that you normally wouldn't see if you were riding in the nice summer months. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about gravel, and not really gravel, but about fenders and what you can do to prepare yourself for, do you need fenders on your bike fenders actually protect your bicycle. They're known as mud guards also. They're a crucial accessory for any cyclist looking to stay dry and mud-free on their ride, especially when commuting to work. These simple devices attach to the front or rear of the bike and prevent water and debris from spraying up on the tires and ruining your clothing. So, let's see what we got here to talk about. Alrighty, so we go to our next thing here. And yeah, I know you got cookies. Good, good. So here it is. They're kind of a nuisance, I will say. When I've put them on my bike before, you really have to, you know, be careful about how you attach them. You got to make sure that the struts don't rub against the tires. They're a little tricky. So if you're not familiar with putting fenders on your bike, go to your local bike shop and let them do it for you, because they have probably put a couple of pair of fenders on a bike now and then. So I would certainly look into that. By the way, if you're suffering from a head cold, hot tea and honey is great. So anyway, if you're shopping for a fender, it's important to consider materials for weight, durability, and quality. As with most things, you get what you pay for. And it is all true. A simple plastic fender with flimsy mounts might be a little more affordable, but it might mean replacing it rather quickly. So does your fender have double seat stays and the ability and stability with just a single mount? It depends on what you're doing here. It all really depends. Do you have eyelets on the bike? Do you not have eyelets on your bike? There's a lot of things that people don't realize when they go to purchase their first set of fenders. Without threaded eyelets down by the dropouts, you're going to have a little bit of trouble putting a fender on if it is a full strut fender and a full fender, one that goes all the way around. By the way, the full coverage fenders are definitely the best way to go if you're looking for your best protection as far as that goes. Fenders are typically made of plastic or metal, and they attach to the bike with brackets that are bolted to the bike. They provide the most coverage and are ideal for wet and muddy conditions. They're also best option for touring and commuting because they keep the rider and their gear dry. And that's a key point there. Not just the rider dry, but your gear dry too. So if you're wearing tights or you're wearing rain pants or anything that you're wearing, will definitely stay drier if you're using fenders. So it makes a big, big difference. So the big thing is it's important to check in advance for clearance, because you want to have enough clearance to put those fenders on there. And that's a super important thing. Without the right clearance, if you're trying to run a fatter tire and now you're putting fenders on and maybe your bike was designed for, 23 or 25C tires and you've been running 28s, you got to double check that and see what's going on there. Hey, Mark. Good to see you there. Loved your post from Lizzie. She got a shout out earlier. Anyway, so the fenders are the sizing on the fenders is absolutely critical. Now, if you don't have stays on the bottom of the bike, eyelets on the bottom of the bike, at the bottom of the stays, you can get these wraparound straps that will suffice as a stay as an eyelet for you. It makes it a little bit trickier install, but it can be done. I've done it on a number of bikes. I've got a couple of cyclocross bikes downstairs that I use usually for this time of year, just because I don't care if I'm riding on the road on a cross bike or not, because it doesn't really matter. I'm out, I'm riding on the road, I'm enjoying the day, and if it's warm enough, and it has to truly be warm enough for good old Pedal and Ron to be out there on the road, I am not a I'm not a foul weather cyclist. I'm a fair weather cyclist. I will admit that when it comes to riding on the road. Now, if it's cyclocross, that's a totally different story. If you're out and you want to get out on a nice, kind of warmer day, but you don't really want to deal with the roads, you can always just ride your cross bike. And I have the advantage of living a mile and a half away from my cyclocross course, so I've got a 2,300-acre state park in my backyard. And if I just want to go out and spin out for an hour, I can just go down there and spin out for an hour. Now, I will admit, spinning out there for an hour in really, really soft material is a little more challenging than it is when it's a hard pack. If you ever want to know more about that, ask Lizzie. Boy, I'll tell you, those conditions were nasty at the Worlds. I was watching videos and watching the races, and oh my God, it was soup. It was just not a wonderful, well, actually, we say not a wonderful course, but it was actually a great course because of the soup. Soup is what creates the whole drama to the actual race itself and the character to it, too. But anyway, going back to fenders. So, it really depends on what you want to do and how everything fits on your bike. Now, plastic or metal? Well, you know, the plastic fenders are lighter and they definitely work pretty good as long as you get a good quality set of plastic fenders. Don't go for the El Cheapos. Go for something that's got a little bit of thickness to it and substance. Again, if you're putting fenders on your bike at this time of year, weight is not really the concern or discussion that should be had. So I would not worry so much about that. But if you can find a nice set of metal fenders, they are absolutely the best. But again, it all depends on what is available to you and what'll actually fit on your bike. And that we go back and forth on this. It's all about fitting on your bike. So let's go with another option here. Let's say you do not have a lot of choice as far as fit goes, and you do not have fender eyelets on the bottom of your on the top of your dropouts and the bottom of your seat stays, then maybe you want to consider a clip-on fender. Now, it's another option. They attach with simple clips. Some of them often are off the seat post, so you just have a little flap in the back, which basically keeps you from having the old rooster tail on the back side of you. So that's kind of convenient and okay, but I've also seen ways of clipping them on to the stays and having them be almost like the full fenders, but enough to keep the brakes clean and enough to keep the splatter from running up your back, which is kind of nice. And it's okay. I think that they're easy, they're convenient. Sometimes they have little clips that just clip into the seat tube on the bike, and then maybe even like a Velcro or something to hold it in place. There are ways of doing it. They're called half fenders, I think you'll find them called. And you can go that way too. And again, all depending upon what kind of clearance you have with your seat stays and your tires. This is why I'm a big, big proponent of the cyclocross bike, because a cyclocross bike is designed to handle a fatter tire. And of course, if you're a gravel bike rider, you've got all the accommodations you need, because there's all sorts of room and there's usually eyelets on the bike and all that. But by having that extra room that you would have to accommodate a wider tire, it also gives you the advantage of being able to clear fenders okay without too much disruption as far as the rear wheel goes or the front wheel goes. So that's why I always go back to, what is the best bike to buy if I'm going to go out and buy only one bike? Only one bike. I don't need any more. I'm not going to get crazy into this. Yes, you will. I'm just going to buy a bike. You know, I like this gravel idea. You know, I would rather, maybe a mountain bike. Get a cross bike. And the discussion. Just get yourself a nice cyclocross bike and you'll be super happy, because you can use it for anything. And if you're feeling that it's just too slow on the road, odd that you would feel that way. It's probably you, not the bike. But anyway, if it feels like it's too slow on the road, just put some road wheels on it. Put some road tires on the rims that come on the bike. You can get all sorts of tires that are different tread and are very, very suitable for road riding. And you can do everything on a cross bike. And the beauty of that cross bike, I go back and forth on my cross bike. I've just been pushing these things forever. 40 years. And The beauty of the cross bike, it's also more comfortable than a standard road racing bicycle would be. And even if you're getting a road racing bike that is an endurance bike, it's still going to be a little bit less comfortable than a cyclocross bike is going to be. So I, you can also get the good old butt saver. I'm not going to say what they say in this article here. They called the butt something else. It just kind of clips onto the back of the seat post and it sticks out in the back and keeps the slop from coming up. And that works. That works. It's okay. Another thing you can do is you can, and this is real simple, if you have a rack on the back of the bike, you can just put a piece of plastic across the top of the rack and it'll essentially do the same thing. It'll just keep everything from flipping up. Now, what do I like the best? If I'm going to protect myself and my bike, the bottom line is full fender. No question about it. I used to ride years and years ago when I was going out on group training rides in the spring. Everyone sat on my wheel. Why? Because I was the guy that showed up on a group ride and had fenders on my bike with everyone laughing at me and going, oh, look at Ron, he's riding with fenders. What a goofy thing to put on your bike. Blah, ha, ha, ha. Right. Well, it's a good thing to put on my bike, but guess what? Everybody sat on my wheel because if you sit on the wheel of somebody with fenders on their bike, you don't get splattered in the face. Whereas if you are on a regular open wheel, you're going to have that problem. So fenders, I like fenders. Fenders are kind of a cool thing. I think they're great. And then yet there's more. I think I have a little bit more on fenders here. Who needs them? This goes all the way back to Sheldon Brown. Yeah, good old Sheldon. Rest in peace, Sheldon. The article first appeared in the July 1999 issue of Adventure Cyclist magazine. It has been updated to reflect changes in technology and product quality by a gentleman by the name of Paul Buchanan, who is also known as the Casual Roadie. So you can also read Sheldon Brown's original version, and if you go online, you'll certainly be able to find it, because he was kind of a... He was, Sheldon Brown. Everybody knows who Sheldon Brown is. If you're into bicycles, if you're a bicycle mechanic, you got to refer to Sheldon Brown. He's got all sorts of interesting little tidbits that are out there. He was the first guy that ever got online. And I'll say this with some caution, because there may be others that got online and actually started exchanging ideas and information about bicycles and bicycle mechanics. So anyway... If you're riding, even in the hard rain, you're going to get wet, and that's exactly what's going to happen. But the whole thing is, if you're riding in the rain and you have rain clothing on, say you're wearing a nice quality rain jacket or a nice quality rain pants or whatever, you're going to be able to keep yourself somewhat protected from the rainy weather. But when that water starts splashing up from underneath and starts splashing up onto your feet, that's a biggie right there, is your feet will get wet, your feet will get cold, you'll become a little hypothermic. If it's a cold day, it's not real good. I'm going to encourage, and this is this is the one thing that really makes people look at you and go, what do you have on your bike? And that is the big flap on the front fender is a game changer for fenders, all right? It looks stupid. It seems stupid. It probably is stupid, but it's not actually. It's really, really smart, because what it does is it keeps that splash from happening all over your feet. Yeah, you don't think about that much, but your feet are right there down on the road, and they are dealing with this weather and these conditions, and it's really, really important that you try to keep your feet dry, because it's a lot more comfortable when you do. Of course, you can wear rain booties. They make different booties that for different applications that you can put over your shoes, but eventually you're going to feel the seep, and you're going to get the cold, wet seep that creeps in, and no matter how well you protect yourself, you'll probably end up leaking in there somewhere. But you can at least make it comfortable for a while, if not maybe the whole ride. I've seen people put booties on and with rain pants and then take something really, really simple like duct tape and just tape the bottom of the rain pant to the booty. And there you go. Sealed and signed, sealed and delivered. Yeah, you can get a little bit of creep in from the bottom, especially if you're wearing cleats. But, you know, it could have, it could help. It could definitely help. So, you want to make sure that you, it says here, even more vulnerable is the lower section of your headset. They're designed to shed as much water like shingles on a roof, but not everything gets well protected, and sometimes the water goes. If you've ever talked to anyone in construction, water will go in places you never imagined it to go. It's pretty amazing the way it works. It'll creep into everything. So once again, that goes back to when you're overhauling your bike this time of year and getting it all ready, make sure you got plenty of grease in that headset so it helps repel some of the water that might be coming in. So there's, once again, this article talks about, you know, types of fenders. Utility bikes have heavy steel fenders, full-length fenders, definitely the answer for sure. The good ones will have a couple pairs of stays, which will go back to your stays or to your eyelets, and, you know, they'll be pretty stable on the bike. Yeah, you got to be a little careful on the on when you're leaning your bike up against something when you get done, how you support the bike when you get done, because if you just bend those stays a little bit, you're going to then make the tire rub up against the stay, and it's going to be a mess, and that's always a problem. And, you know, some people find fenders to be a hassle to install, and they can be. Once again, if you're having trouble with installing fenders, there's two things you can do. One is you can go visit your local bike shop, as I stated earlier, or the second one is get yourself a set of shorty fenders, because there are ways of dealing with it, including a clip-on short fender that there's a company called Portland Design Works, and it just clips onto the down tube on the bike, and it just keeps stuff from coming back off the front wheel. So it's simple, it works. There's a lot of interesting designs out there. Once again, the full fender is always the way to go. And if you're looking at installing fenders on your bike, let's not do that like an hour before the ride. It is not going to happen. You have certainly got to give yourself some time to do this. It can be a little frustrating once you get them all on there and then you find things rubbing. You're trying to eliminate the rub and you're tweaking it back. It requires some patience, or your local bike shop. Let them be patient. Pay them to be patient. That's a good thing, right? So there are ways of dealing with this. Planet Bike makes a cool fender with a mud flap on the bottom. There's Zephal, I think it was called, out of France. They made a really interesting fender. SG made a really interesting fender. I don't know if those are still around, but I imagine they probably are. And so there's ways of putting fenders on your bikes. I'm a really strong supporter of this idea because it's protection. And think about it as protection, not only for you, who I know you don't care. You don't care about that, right? But your bike, come on now, it's a personal thing, right? This is totally personal. You want to take care of your bike, take care of your equipment, you know, because your equipment will get you to wherever you want to go. So keeping out the sand, the grit, the water, all the goop that's on the road, not to mention what is on the road after winter. Whew, could be anything. You never know. Up here in New England, we have sand and salt, and well, they don't call it salt anymore. They call it material. So I don't think we actually use a real salt any longer on our roads. We use something that is an agent that will melt ice, not salt. I don't even want to get into the specifics on that one, because who knows what kind of chemical effect that has versus what kind of chemical effect salt has on the environment. Not even going to go there. All I know is our roads are generally in pretty good shape. Even when it snows out or freezes over, we're usually pretty good about getting ourselves around because, you know, the roads are designed and transportation is designed all around the cars and trucks. So therefore, they got to keep the roads clear and keep school buses running and all that other fun stuff. But anyway, it happens. So I just took a sip out of my nice warm tea, which is still nice and warm with a little honey in it. Good when you have a cold, you know. I got a little congestion. So there's a question here as I move on into my show here. And that is, well, what the heck is Peddling Ron doing talking about cycling and having a cold at the same time? Well, you know, we have kind of a general rule, which I've been stating for a number of years, and that is if your cold or your illness is not a fever, very important, and is from the shoulders up, you can ride your bike. If it's from the shoulders down, that means it's going respiratory, it's going to get into your lungs. No, don't ride your bike. That's just a general rule. I'm not a doctor, and my doctor friend here, who's my co-host, is at work being a doctor right now, so I can't get any input from her right now. And it's probably good, because if Fran were here, she'd go, "You should just rest. Don't ride your bike at all." I'm sure that's what she would say. But that's okay. Some of us just really need to get out, especially when you take a look at anybody who's training for an event of some sort coming up, say maybe either, you know, a race event or a long bike ride event or whatever, and they're trying to get themselves in shape and they're trying to put in some base miles over the winter time, you know, and they really feel the need to get out and ride their bike. Well, you know, are you going to hurt yourself by going out and riding your bike with a cold? Depends on how hard you ride. Are you going to be smart and not ride hard when you have a cold? Yes, you are, because you got that advice here and you know better, don't you? Don't you know better? I kept my heart rate nice and low this morning. I went to spin class and I taught my spin class this morning, which is not a spin class. It's an indoor cycling class. I don't do anything that they do in quote unquote spinning. I'm an indoor cyclist and an outdoor cyclist. I bring what I know from outdoors indoors. That's how I do it. So yeah, it certainly was thick mud. I'll bet it was, Mark. I can only imagine. It was just really, it was soupy. It was real soupy. I'm getting, Mark is online right now. Lizzie's dad is online right now listening to the show. And yeah, it just looked like, I'll tell you what, the pit guys must have been like outrageously busy, because it was disgusting. We'll get to that in a little while. So saddle up or slow down, cycling with a cold. What do you think? All right. Well, if you're dealing with a cold or flu, you may have questions on your cycling routine. Again, fever, don't ride your bike. Just don't do it. Don't do it. That's silly. Your body is already, with the fever, your immune system is working really, really hard to combat whatever it is that's in you. That's why you have a fever. Okay, that's why your body is overheating. Your body is overheating because it is trying to burn off whatever nasties are inside of you. So if you got a fever, no. The rule is no. That's it. So don't do that. And I know people who've gone out and, you know, they've ridden with their little fevers. There's a crazy commercial on TV right now that I saw, and it's this guy and his buddies, and they're all skiing, you know, and the one guy wakes up with a horrible cold and, you know, things are not good. So he takes the A word with that is fizzy plus that type of tablet. And all of a sudden he's good to go and go outside and contaminate all of his friends with his germs. Skiing. don't even get me started. It's just, you probably shouldn't do that, okay? But another thing is, you know, I went to class this morning. I wore a mask. Why did I wear the mask? Everybody's going, why are you wearing a mask? And I went, because I don't want to infect you. You guys, you don't need to be infected by me. If I've got a cold, then I am basically carrying it around with me. I do not want to infect anybody else. So therefore, I wear a mask. Be smart. Just be smart. It's not difficult to be smart. Sometimes it's challenging, but it's not difficult. So if you have mild cold symptoms, like a runny nose without the elevated body temperature, you can still go for a light bike ride outdoors as long as you feel up to it. Just be sure to drink plenty of fluids to help your body fight off the cold and wear warm clothing to avoid getting chilled. Again, simple. It seems like common sense. It is common sense, but I know some people don't always exercise it. It's best to avoid high-intensity workouts. What did I do this morning? Kept my heart rate down. Zone 2, a little tiny touch into zone 3, but mostly zone 2, the entire hour on the bike. I tell you what, when I did that, as bad as I feel as far as the congestion goes and all, I felt a lot better when I got done with an hour on the bike at a real low heart rate. I wasn't breathing real hard. I was not, you know, exhausting myself in any way. And my head kind of cleared up a little bit more. So I'm good with it. I think it's a good thing. So can you boost your immune system by exercising during a cold? Let's see what they have to say here. Exercising regularly in fresh air is beneficial for maintaining good physical fitness and strengthening the immune system. However, if you are currently dealing with a cold, it's important to be careful. Moderate cycling is okay if you feel well enough to do it without medication. If you have a severe cold or flu, it's best to rest until your symptoms disappear. Again, simple wisdom. When should I stop exercising with a cold? If you experience symptoms like a fever, sore throat, body aches, or similar, stop riding your bike. Stop. That's it. If you're using your bike to commute with, testy. Why are you going to work? Why are you going anywhere when you have that bad of an illness? Just don't do that. Don't do that. It's common sense. So your pulse rate's another good indicator whether your body's ready for exercise. An elevated resting heart rate can suggest that your immune system is fighting a cold. In this case, it's important to take it easy for a few days. So I started feeling a little off on Friday after I taught my morning class. I came home and I did some what Fran calls power lying about, or also known by me as nap. Definitely took a good nap. And it was a long nap, and it felt like the right thing to do. Why? Because I'm listening to my body. I'm listening to what it has to say. And my body said, no, you're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to do anything. You need to just sit still and let this thing roll through you and be done with it. What did I do that was right and super, super, super helpful? I just drank so much liquid, and I'm still drinking tons of liquid. I drank electrolytes because electrolytes, definitely you're going to maybe sweat out some of what you're dealing with. It's good for you. And hot tea and honey. Oh, God. I've been addicted to hot tea and honey. I'm kind of a coffee guy, but I got to tell you, I'm kind of enjoying this hot tea and honey. It's really good. It's really, really yummy. And the honey's nice on your throat and if you have a sore throat, but I didn't really have that. So fever is a sign that your body is fighting an infection, and you just don't do it. So how long do I take a break from cycling when I'm sick? As a rule of thumb, the stronger your cold, the longer the break. You should keep in mind that when resuming riding or training with a mild cold, your body should be mostly free of symptoms. And that's why I canceled class Sunday and I canceled class Monday. And I didn't go back in until today because things are starting to lighten up. I'm starting to feel a lot better. I had a whole bunch of energy last night, made a nice dinner for Fran and I, and everything just started feeling good. And Fran looked at me and said, "So, what are you doing tomorrow?" I said, "I'm going to teach my class." She goes, "You're not." You know, gave me the Fran, a vote of disapproval. And I said, "Yeah, I am. I feel okay. You know, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. I'll go in, I'll do my class, I'll come home, I'll do my radio show, and then I'll just simply take a nap. Again, another nap. And I'll take a nice little nap this afternoon, and that'll be great. And then I have another small class to teach tonight. But, you know, it's a very, very mild cycling/yoga class. So it starts out with a half an hour of cycling and finishes with a half an hour of yoga. So that's actually going to be good for me. That'll be really good because I keep things very low key. The crowd I have that comes to that is generally not super aggressive on their bikes, and it's just a great way to, you know, to introduce people to cycling and also introduce those who cycle to what it's like to really stretch your body correctly. That's one I struggle with all the time, but I've been doing this now for a number of years, and that's basically what I do on Tuesday nights. So it's a good thing. So what's the risk of developing myocarditis while cycling with a cold? Ooh, boy. Viral infections, similar immune disorders. Again, mild cycling. Mild. Can I ride an e-bike when I have a cold? Yeah, you could probably ride the e-bike. But once again, it's all the other rules I've been telling you about. If it's from the shoulders up, probably okay. If there's no fever, probably okay. But you just got to take it a little easier. Mint tea and honey works well for me, says Pete. Hi, Pete. Yeah, I like it. That's, I think, what I got going on in here right now. It's good. It's all good. I like it. I like it a lot. I've been drinking like a madman, which means I've been up every couple of hours at night because I've been drinking like a madman. But I've been drinking nothing but goodness, and so that's been real good. I tried some coffee this morning, but it just didn't really, you know, I love my coffee. But when I can't taste my coffee, that's an indicator right there. And I can taste the tea, but tasting the coffee was like, it's like I'm putting something warm in my body. It doesn't taste like it should because I don't have my sense of smell back yet. So you just want to be careful. If you've got shortness of breath, rapid heartbeat, chest pain, dizziness and fainting, and swelling of the legs, stay off your bike, period. Just do that. All right, that's enough of cycling with a cold. I'm going to move on. Let's see, what else do we have here? We had also started speaking last week about your guide to key cycling metrics that can make your rides better. And so I'm going to jump into that and talk a little bit more about it as we go. So we're going to talk a little bit about 10 cycling. 1, speed, average speed. Great for the satisfaction of seeing your pace pick up. Equipment needed, a basic bicycle computer. Yeah, okay. Have I talked about speed, average speed, number of miles, and all that other stuff versus time spent on the bike? Yeah. I think that was last week. Maybe it was last week. Maybe it was the week before. I had a heavy endorsement from Carmichael, from Chris Carmichael, because I found a link on one of his sites that talked about time in the saddle more so than miles. And it's any good cycling coach that's out there, anybody who's really worth their weight, is going to tell you that it's about the time in the saddle more so than the average speed. Average speed is not an indicator of anything, because it could be your average speed on a very flat road versus your average speed when you ride out in my backyard is going to be different. It's hilly out here, and You know, if you take, we figured we ride an average of 60 to 65 feet per mile is what we climb out here. So it's a rolling terrain. It's not super, it's not mountainous hilly, but, you know, that's a lot. And when I ride my bike up to the community center in the morning to teach my class, I'm going up, depending on which way I go, I can climb 800 feet. And I will have gone 8 miles. So that's 100 feet a mile. That's a lot of feet per mile. So you're definitely doing a lot of elevation when you do that. The good news is you get to ride back downhill afterwards, and that's always a fun part of the whole endeavor as far as that goes. So average speed, I think, is kind of more of a personal indicator. I tend to call it a bragging point, and I don't have a lot of room or tolerance for those who brag about their average speed. It just doesn't really matter. You want to brag about your average speed? Go do a time trial and tell me what your average speed was. That's a bragging point. That is definitely worth doing. So let's move on. Distance. So you're averaging 50 to 80 miles a week. Can you make it to 100? Baby steps, okay? Distance is something, and also training in general is something that I will bring up as a... I had something when I was running a lot. I was running competitively for about 10 years, and I called it the 10% rule. And the 10% rule was never more than 10% additional miles per week. I do the same thing with time, so it can be used in minutes and hours. You can do the same thing. 10% rule is a great way to do it. So if you're training for a specific event, let's say it is a 100 kilometer ride or a 100 mile ride, whatever it is, so just pick a couple of big goals that people go for, you gotta start by looking at when that is and then back pacing yourself all the way back down to where you are right now. So if you're at 30 mile bicycle rides, or, you know, 2 to 3 hour bicycle rides, all right, and that's where you're at, and you're looking at doing anywhere from a 5 to 10 hour bike ride, depending on what you're looking at. Everybody's different, okay, and your average speed, that thing that I talked about earlier, that I dislike so much, is an indicator of that. But if you're looking at that and you're trying to factor off of that, you start from week, let's say 8 or 12 or whatever it may be, and you work your way backwards. And you work your way backwards by saying, okay, I'm going to do 100 kilometers. So the week before that, I want to do, let's say, 90 kilometers. The week before that, I want to do 80 kilometers. The week before that, I do 70. And you backstep it down to where you are right now, today. And that is what we call a smart way of training, because that 10% rule will generally not give you it will not overstress your body on your long rides to move to the point where you're going to get what? Sick, like I am right now. I, you know, maybe one of the reasons I'm sick, well, I know why I'm sick. I spend way too much time out in the community, and I have a bad habit called the Yukon men's and women's basketball. And of course, you know, when you're sitting in an arena with 10 to 16,000 people, you're going to be exposed to stuff. And, you know, maybe I should have been wearing a mask to be able to avoid that, but you know what? I'll just let my immune system work on this, and I'll be through it in no time. It is going much faster than I had anticipated. So there we go. And then also teaching at my local community center, I'm in with people all day long, every day. So it's, you know, exposure is an issue, and it's going to happen. So time spent, that's another thing on this list. Yeah, you obviously know by now, I'm a big believer in the time. Elevation, bragging rights, and building strength. Hills make you stronger. Elevation gain in cycling is the total amount of feet or meters you climb over the course of a ride. Climbing is good training because your body must work harder to and a harder effort in order to overcome the pull of gravity. Yes, sir, gravity is only your friend when you're going downhills. Be aware of that. So you need to set climbing goals, and you need to, basically, we go back to the same thing, 10% rule. Don't overclimb it, man. Don't overclimb it. Steps, baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. Baby steps will get you where you need to go. And that requires something that the P word, which no one likes to hear, and that is patience. So definitely a big thing. Calories, yeah, it's good for fine-tuning your fueling. But, you know, calorie calculators are not a perfect science by any means. So it depends on your calories and what you're putting in. Are you putting in good calories? Are you putting in junk? And, you know, if it's in a plastic sealed bag that came out of the grocery store or the convenience store, it's probably junk. Just a statement, that's all. So you might want to watch that very, very carefully. So ultimately, you can also do things like using a power meter makes a big difference, because you can kind of, you can see where you're at. It helps you understand where you're at. And if you get into your cycling season and you start really, really looking into the science of what's going on in your body, an occasional time trial is a great idea, even if it's not an organized one, which I'm finding harder and harder to find these days. I used to put one on every week back when I had the bike shop, but we're going back 30 years or more. So it was a long 30, 40 years. I used to have a weekly Wednesday night time trial, which was great. It was in the middle of the week. It was a good tune-up for anybody who was racing their bike. It was a great time for people who were not competitive to go out and test their mettle. And so it's a good thing. But you can also do a time trial on your own. You can pick a specific route or a specific spot. Maybe it's a flat section between point A and point B, and you want to see what you can roll out, and you compare that from week to week. That's a good thing. That's okay. Cadence. Yeah. Cadence is great. Great, great, great. Work on your cadence. Always work on your cadence. When I'm teaching my extreme classes this time of year, which are on Sundays, I work on things like cadence and power at the same time, because if you apply cadence to power, to resistance, you will A, get stronger, and B, when you're finding yourself out on that group ride and you see yourself slowly drifting off the back and going, uh-oh, something's wrong, you can do two things. You can put it in a bigger gear, and you can get out of the saddle and you chase hard and pull yourself back in. And then you do that for four or five times, and before you know it, you're off the back permanently. Versus if you can just take your cadence in the gear you are in and were in when you were sitting in the middle of all that, and just rev it up by 10 or 15 RPMs, you'll pull yourself right back in. And that's probably a better way to do it. But that's just me, not anybody a serious coach out there. I have coached a lot of people along the ways, but these are things that you can kind of live by. They're very simple rules of thumb. Rating a perceived exertion. Yeah. So again, I teach a lot of classes in the wintertime, and my perceived exertion is one of the metrics that I use for helping people understand where they are at, as in moderate resistance being a flat road ride. I also equate that to a 60% average effort. Moderate hard, which I equate to a 70% effort. Comfortably hard, which I equate to being a 75 to 78% effort. Comfortably hard also, if you've ever done an FTP test, that's about right. It's right around there. So that is the rate of resistance that you can handle, or the rate of effort that you can handle for an extended period of time. And you think you could probably do that for a while. So that's your average speed. And then, of course, uncomfortably hard, pretty self-explanatory. That is a rate that you cannot handle for an extended period of time. And then beyond uncomfortably hard, that is a very hard short burst, and probably shouldn't be using that a whole lot in a ride. So that would be what I would work on there. Heart rate monitors, yeah. There's some awesome heart rate monitors out there. You can use your heart rate to indicate a lot of this. If you're diligent enough about it to record the information, that really helps. Strava helps. There's so many, even Apple Health. I mean, there's a lot of places that you can record your heart rate. And I think it's super important. I like it a lot. Power in watts. Yeah, watts are, when I teach classes, I teach by perceived exertion and wattage. And fortunately, we have bikes that have a wattage indicator on them. It's not as accurate as a real wattage meter that you would have on an outdoor bicycle. Nothing is the same as an outdoor bicycle. But anyway, it does give you at least a parameter to work with. So I think that that's a good thing. And heart rate variability. Understanding when you need more recovery time. So I used to do this before we had heart rate monitors. I'm that old, and we didn't have heart rate monitors. What we had was our fingers on our pulse on our wrist, like this right here. And I'm indicating that for those of you who are on audiophile, I'm putting my fingers on my wrist and I'm feeling my heart rate. Or I would also do it up on my juggler, up on your neck, and you could feel your heart rate. My test was, and many years ago, old school, this is old school Ron here, wake up in the morning, check your resting pulse. If it's higher than normal, it's a good day to go easy on the bike or don't ride the bike. If it's back down low again, then you're good to go again. Excuse me. So, anyway, it's an indicator. It's general. I go back to what I stated this last weekend in my podcast. An old friend, George Orr, used to say, you go down, you pick up your bike. If it feels heavy, don't ride it that day. If your bike always feels heavy, maybe it's time for a new bike. No, never mind. So anyway, those are some lists of things. And this came from Celine Yeager from Bicycling Magazine, who's very smart. And I really like her articles. She does some good stuff. And anyway, things you can check out. And let's see what we got here. What else do we have on our list today? I gotta do a quick blast forward here. I'll save all this other stuff for next week. But let's go to Cyclocross Worlds. I'm going to start with our good friend Lizzie, who has been racing magnificently, and she's in the UC 23 category for women, and she had, I thought, a really, really, really good race. And I know her dad's very proud of her because he's been posting on Facebook, which is really, really cool. Lizzie ended up finishing 18th overall. And just so you know, the winner of that race, of course, was, she finished the race in 48:24, and Lizzie was down closer to 5 or 6 minutes. But still, you know, you're still in there. You're not getting lapped. And give her credit, she's a U.S. rider. We don't have many strong U.S. riders. She was the first U.S. rider. And so that was kind of a cool thing. So big, big shout out to Lizzie. Yeah, we love watching you, Lizzie. Keep it up, man. We're behind you all the way here at Bicycle Talk. And then we go on to, let's see, I got the women's race here. And let's hear it for the Dutch. 1, 2, 3. All right. It's really, really hard to be a cyclocross racer these days because the first 4 women finishers in the women's elite were all Dutch riders. Finishing time it was Femme Van Empel, and she's been dominating this year. She's been doing really, really good. But there's other names out there like Lucinda Brand and Patrice Puck. or Puck Petrierce, excuse me. But just to give you a general idea, Van Empel won the race 46:19, and Lucinda Brand was 1 minute and 20 seconds behind her, and Puck was 1 minute and 54 seconds behind her. So just giving you an idea about where everything is at as far as that goes. Clara Hossinger, who is our national champion for many, many years in a row, was 3 minutes and 45 seconds behind them. I'm not saying that Clara's not great, because Clara is great. She's an awesome rider, but see the caliper we're dealing with here? It's just a different world over there. So I'm going to move over on to the winner of the race, who we had, of course, strongly predicted, because why not? He's winning everything. And without two big competitors like Pidcock and Van Aert, it makes it really tough to beat Matthew Vanderpoel. He won the elite men's title and 29 years old. He took his sixth elite world cyclocross jersey in style, riding away from his rivals in the first lap to win comfortably by 37 seconds. So the fellow Dutchman, what do we got here? Nieuwenhuis. I can't get his name here. Anyway, he was 37 seconds behind him, and in third place was Van Thoren, he was a minute and 6 seconds behind. So that was the world. We knew that Matthew was going to kick some butt, as he has been. Will he go for number seven? If he goes for number seven, he will be going for a tie with a former world cyclocross champion. We shall see. I have run out of time. So guess what? We got to move on to events here. Fatty Cross was last weekend, but there is also another one coming up at the end of the month. So you might want to keep your eyes on that on Bike Reg. The Frozen Four training races start on Sunday, March 3rd in Farmington, Connecticut. The Philly Bike Show is March 16th through the 17th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. And the People for Bikes Leadership Conference is March 26th through the 29th. The Natch Aug Epic is the 24th of March. And just so you know, last week there were 431 people signed up. This week there are 452. It just keeps growing, and there is eventually a cutoff, so be aware of that. So finishing points, let's move on. It's February, so Groundhog Day. My friend Wayne Norman from WILI Radio in Willimantic said a few days ago, it's funny how we rely on the wisdom of a rodent to predict our weather, and then we are disbelieving scientists who are warning us on climate change. Good point, Wayne. What's your perspective on improving your ride and bicycling in your area? How about some fenders? Need some fenders? Fenders, anyone? And we do love our listener comments, so do appreciate anything that you send over to me. I do appreciate it. Let's see. 2024, more miles, ride, commute to work, around town, better fitness, or maybe enjoying your bike rides by simply slowing down and smelling the roses. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active, our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day and park that car or truck. Ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, Franz Dorch. If you're listening on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment down here below, or on the YouTube channel, you can leave comments below also. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute to the information of the show, Bicycle Talk, the number 1 at gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Hey, remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!